Hey everybody, welcome to GRCast episode 18. I'm Joe Ryan, your host, and joining me in the studio this week, we have Matt Grauka.
Hello.
And Allison Hill.
Hey everybody.
I think we're going to talk about some games as we always do, and I know Allison's got some exciting ones to talk about. Take it away.
So, yesterday, Outlast came out. If you haven't heard of it. If you haven't heard of it, it's made... to make you shit your pants.
It's not a horror game. It's a simulation.
No. So basically, it's about you're like this reporter who gets a letter, kind of like a whistleblower letter from an asylum. Of course, it's always an asylum. That they're doing bad stuff and you should get to the bottom of it. You're a reporter because they keep sweeping things under the rug and paying off people, and you know they need to stop doing what they're doing. They're like, you know, hurting people and experimenting with their patients and stuff, so you should do something about it. And so I'm like, okay, I'm a reporter, this is great, I'm gonna go there with nothing but my notebook and a camcorder, and that's it. And so
as well prepared as any other horror game.
I know, my boyfriend's like, where's your gun? I'm like, there is no gun in this game. Like, the slogan
I brought
is,
my integrity.
The slogan is, you run, hide, or die. So you get there. Also, your camera, your video camera, it's kind of cool. You can right-click to bring it up at any point, and then you can turn on the night vision. So if you're in a pitch-black room... you could turn on the night vision, but that night vision, not just the camera itself, it's fine, but the night vision takes a battery. So it's kind of like your flashlight, because you don't have a flashlight. So you have to like pick up batteries as you go, or else you won't be able to see in the dark. And I really like that because like the night vision kind of makes it even eerier. And in fact, the first scare that almost made me shit myself involved going into a pitch black room and turning on the night vision. And then there was like, you know, a dead body hanging right in front of me, and it made like a loud noise, and I, you know, was like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. So you get to the asylum, the front door is locked, and I don't know if you decide to go, like, it's nighttime or dusk, and so you decide to break in through a window. I'm not really sure how legal that is. So, reporter doing my job. So, you get in there and, you start looking around and, you know, there's kind of like a lot of stuff, like just like thrown out. You don't really see anybody. You're kind of like, huh, this is strange. And, throughout the game, you can pick up batteries. You can pick up, documents that you can read. Like, some are about patients, and their conditions, and then as you go through it, if you bring up your camcorder and record certain events, then he'll write down in his own notebook and you can read your own character's thoughts. But yeah, it's pretty much going through and you find a guy on a spike, okay? He's still alive and he's on a spike and he's like, you have to get out. He's like, they've escaped. You have to get out. And I'm like, who? Escaped, and then he like dies, and so it's like, and like in your notebook it's really funny, he's like, so I found this guy on a spike, holy shit, and he's like, too bad he told me to get out after the way back was already, you know, blocked, you know, I can't go back the way I came, because my first thought was like, I'll go back out that window and just jump right out, here we go. He's like, no, you can't anymore. And I was like, oh. So yeah, so just, I don't know, scary stuff everywhere. There's like, you get into a room and there's like the same room with a guy in a spike. There's just heads like lined up on shelves, like jars. Like there's just heads everywhere. And you're just like, someone's been collecting heads. And then you look around and there's, and like, as you go through, like there's bodies everywhere and they're all missing their heads. And you're like, also, there's usually like next to dead bodies, there's usually always like detailed guts like falling out of them. And they'll be like, you can hear like little flies like around them. So it's pretty detailed, which is really awesome. And then the thing that makes me tense the most, which I think they did a really good job. Like, a lot of times people underestimate sound in games. At parts, like tense parts, he starts breathing like hectically, like, oh my god, what the fuck is happening? And like, it gets really loud, and it makes me like upset and tense and like, oh my god, like it's really strange how just hearing him breathing and gasping for air and stuff like that. It's, but yeah, so far I only lasted like a half an hour before I had to turn off because I'm a wimp. So I didn't really get very far yet, but so far I really like it.
I finally found a survival horror game that I like the look of, actually.
Really?
You've just made me think of it, and I've looked it up as you were talking, and it was never funded. It was through Kickstarter, but it sounded like such an awesome idea. It was called Beef, and
what?
It was called Beef, and you play as a cow, and you have to escape an abattoir. And
oh my god!
It's kind of like that Slender Man game, only instead of supernatural being, it's the butcher that you're trying to run away from. And although it wasn't funded, so I don't know that it'll ever be made now, check out the trailer at some point because it's hilarious. It also looked pretty scary, but the idea is pretty funny.
Yeah, that does sound pretty funny.
I would play that game in a heartbeat. What I want is someone to make a horror game where you walk in, you endure like 5 minutes of horror or whatever, and then you find a guy on a spike or something, and he says, "Get the hell out of here, I'm on a spike for God's sake." And you have the option to just turn around and walk out the door, and the game says, "You win, you did the smart thing and fucking left."
Yeah, another thing I just remembered, when if you're like in a doorway, he'll like kind of put his hands up. Like, if you look down, you can see his body too. So like, even though it's first person, they still modeled your body or whatever. But like, he'll like, you'll see him put his hand up like on like the edge of like the door frame, and then you can press Q or E and he'll lean either way, so you can peek around corners and stuff. But the more important thing, and when the hint told me like that I can do it, I'm like, okay, that means I'm gonna have to run soon. When you run, because you can sprint in the game, thank God. If you press E, if you hold E while you're sprinting, you'll look behind you and as you're sprinting. And I think that's such a clever thing to put in, because it just, as you're sprinting, you can glance behind you and see the thing that you're running from is getting closer. And then you're like, holy shit, I'm going to die. And I don't know. It's pretty cool.
You know, what's a crazy thing that I've found about horror games is that, and maybe this is how it is for everybody, but I mostly scare myself because I'll be walking around all slow. I'm like easing open the doors in Amnesia or something to see if somebody's there. Or in like that Slender Man game, you know, I'm walking around the woods and I'm turning every which way to see where Slender Man is and everything. And it's terrifying when you see something. So half the time it's terrifying when you don't see anything. But if I just press the sprint button and run through every single area and the monsters jump out or they do whatever, doesn't scare me a bit for some reason, just because I'm running. I could just sprint through that whole game. Even if they jump out and kill me, it's just like, oh, whatever. It's the creeping around and anticipating it that freaks me out.
Yeah, a lot of times games will utilize very wisely the fear of the unknown will actually scare you more sometimes than even like if a monster jumps out at you. So like, you know, having eerie music but then nothing happening is just like, you know, it's meant to fuck with you and stuff. By the way, Joe, I think I mentioned Scratches last time. In hindsight, Scratches is not really that scary. It was me doing like, you know, like anticipating stuff happening and like walking around slowly and all that kind of stuff. Especially after playing Outlast, I'm like, yeah, Scratches wasn't scary at all. It's still a good game, but oh my god. Like, why was I scared of that game? It was really funny.
Do you think Outlast is like the scariest game you've ever played, like everybody said it was shaping up to be?
I'm not sure. Granted, I've only played a half an hour of it so far. So, I mean, it might be. I was very terrified when I played the Silent Hill games for the first time, but that was, you know, a while ago. And but I mean, so far, like the first couple things were like jump scares, And that gives you like a quick scare, and it makes you scared to go into rooms and stuff. But I really enjoy the kind of looming, like something's following you, like, oh my God, it's kind of like it's more lasting effect. And I think that's starting to happen because you find out that there's this huge guy and he like tries to kill you and he's been following you and you're like, oh God, oh God, oh God. I actually let him kill me to see, like after it like saved, to see what, just to see what would happen. And you're like, it doesn't like, it's not like an instant kill. He like punches me and you know it gets all red and stuff, so I still have a chance to run away, but I just stood there and then he picks me up like by my throat and then I think he ripped my arm off or something. It was pretty sweet.
That's like the opposite of the definition of sweet.
Well, you know.
What?
So yeah, it's pretty graphic. I grabbed it like right before, because if you pre-ordered it, you know, before it came out, you got discount. So I got it for like $16 instead of 20, but now it's 20. So, but yeah, it's, I highly recommend it so far.
I was under the impression for whatever reason that that was going to be like a full price game. And then when I looked into it yesterday or the day before, they were like, yeah, it's only $20. I hear it's not super long. I thought I read like you can beat it in like 4 hours if you don't spend too much time goofing off or just creeping around being freaked out.
Oh my God, it's gonna take me like 8 hours. Like, you should have seen me playing. I'm like, I don't want to go in this room. I don't want to go in this room. I don't want to go in this room.
I feel like you could make a terrifying game, like maybe the scariest game ever, if you just put someone somewhere and you specifically told them, don't go blank, whatever, into the dark, into certain rooms or whatever. There's something in there that's going to kill you. Don't go in there. Stay out no matter what. And then put in a bunch of terrifying noises and scary little glimpses of things whenever you have to go into whatever area you said don't go into. But just put in zero enemies that can actually hurt you. So the entire game, they're just anticipating a huge scare, freaking themselves out from the noises and the little creatures running around and everything. But there's not a single thing in the game that could actually hurt you. It's just the game saying, stay out, it's scary in there, over and over and over again, and trying to freak you out on purpose.
Yeah, that could probably work.
Well, what else do you have for this week?
Also yesterday, I decided for the first time, and I greatly enjoy it. If you haven't played it, it's kind of like a top-down view, survival type game. You play a little character that runs around. You kind of just wake up in the middle of nowhere, and it's all randomly generated terrain every time you start. And there's this guy over you, and, he's just like, you don't look so good. You should probably do something about that, and then leaves. And I'm like, okay. And so you have like a health meter, a hunger meter, and also a brain meter. And I think that's more so for like morale or insanity kind of thing. And you know, you have to collect things. It actually reminds me a lot of Minecraft, because I have to cut down trees, and then I have to like, well, no, first I have to collect sticks and rocks, then I have to build an axe, then I have to cut down trees to get logs so I can build a fire. And like, you have to, when night comes, you have to stay away from the dark. Actually, literally, my first death was the first night I didn't have a fire, and at first it gets kind of like just like dim. And it's, your character's like, I should build a fire. It's getting dark. And then when it gets dark, it gets pitch black. And so then I'm like, oh shit, what do I do now? And all of a sudden, like, you know, the screen kind of flashes red, like, because you got hit by something. And I was like, oh my God, something bit me. What was that? And then all of a sudden, I just died. And then at the end, it's like, I was killed by the darkness. Like, the darkness just killed me. So I was like, oh my God. So, my second playthrough, I was actually able to last 12 days, which I thought was pretty good. I mean, I'm not really sure if that's good or not, but most of the time I was borderline starving. Actually, I technically did die twice, but both times I had found this creepy altar first and activated it, and then I died. I like respawned there randomly. And I was like, oh, cool. So you can, so there's like a whole list of things that you can do. So like there's traps that you can build, so you can try to trap animals to kill them and then cook them and eat them. And I made like this science machine that allowed me to create more things, like make more recipes for things, stand near it. So I kind of had like a base of operations like in the middle of the map, and I had my campfire there. And then I was able to build a small farm and try to farm food, which still was like starving. I really like it. It's like, I love like survival games and stuff, and it's pretty challenging. Like, oh, and the best part is that when your brain meter gets down really low, things start to get like fuzzy. Like the whole screen is kind of like wavy a little bit. As you're rocking around, shadows of creepy monsters start appearing and disappearing like all around you. And it really freaked me out. And after a while, I realized that those were figments of my imagination and they weren't actually real. But it was still pretty creepy. Like it was just like kind of like this weird, like you're seeing mirages and stuff. So I thought that was pretty neat as well.
That game is fantastic. I'm pretty sure I reviewed it for the site. If people who are listening want to go check out my review of Don't Starve on there. That, man, I finally got to the point where I was pretty good at it. I had this little base. I was near a bunch of little ponds where these like evil frogs live or whatever. And I would go and I would just lay a ton of little traps. And then I would go and like hit one of the frogs to piss all of them off. And then I would run back past the traps. So as they tried to chase me, they'd all get caught. And then I would loot the traps for the frogs, bring the frogs back to base and hang them on a drying rack to turn them into frog jerky, which is very good for you in that game. And it was like, I had this awesome base. I had like weapons and armor and I had all this stuff. I was surviving for it seemed like ages. And then winter came and all of a sudden the night is like twice as long. So you have less time to do anything. And also you're freezing to death because I didn't know I needed to make any warm winter clothing beforehand. So then I just froze into a solid block after couple days.
Oh my god. That sounds terrifying.
That game is really good, but it's one of those things where it's like, you play it, you survive a couple days, and then you go, okay, I think I know how to get past the thing that beat me, and then you get another day or two and something else kills you, and it's like, okay, now I have to plan for the first thing and the second thing, and then the third thing kills you, and it's like, okay, I need to plan for the first thing and the second thing and the third thing. And eventually it's like, Jesus.
Yeah, I think I got killed by some angry pigs at the end of mine. It's kind of sad.
And for anyone that likes the sound of this, it's going to be free with if you buy the PS4 in that first month.
That's true.
Really? That's kind of awesome. How's that going to work on a controller, I wonder? I feel like that game really works well with the clicking and the combining of items that way.
Yeah, because there's a whole list on the left side. I guess you would just press a button to scroll through it, I guess.
I feel like that will get you killed. You will have to be very quick. What else do you get free if you buy the PS4? Matt seems to know.
Drive Club, though it's not the full version, and some other bits and pieces. I think there's a couple of indie games. I think I read somewhere that there's as many as 12 to 15 titles going to be available for free. If you have PlayStation Plus, or if you don't, there's going to be some MMOs that you can download and play for free. So even if you're just getting the console day one, you're going to have a lot to get through.
And now we're all sitting around daydreaming about, can we buy a PS4 on day one?
And we're all saying no, no.
Yeah.
There's no reason to. There really isn't. I don't think there's anything coming out that's PS4 specific that I feel like I would die if I didn't play it as soon as it came out. If you are smart, you will wait until later when there are more games out or it's cheaper, but most people are not going to do that. They're just going to buy it on the first day.
But we work in media. We have to play the games right away and review them for the site.
That's the excuse. There we go.
Here's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to buy the games for my PS3, and then I'm going to play them, and then at the end I'm going to add a little paragraph that says, this game looks way better on PS4, and then I'm going to sell it as a PS4 review. And I feel like I will probably not be saying anything that isn't true.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of cross-generational things this time round. I don't think we've ever seen anything like this where 90% of the titles that are available are not only cross-platform, but cross generation anyway, so you can buy it for your PS3, you can buy it for Xbox One, you can buy it for PlayStation 4.
There's some program,
FIFA, you
isn't
can buy on
there?
PS2.
Isn't there some program where if you buy a game now, you can like pay a few dollars when the time comes, and then you also get the PS4 version or something? It's like $10 to upgrade or something like that.
Yeah, that's right, with Call of Duty, Battlefield, and a few others, but I'm not 100% sure on how it works.
That would be something to see. I assume it'll be a downloadable thing. I wonder if they'll like make you send your disc to them or something. So I don't know. It seems it's a decent idea as long as they've thought it through, which I guess I don't care if they have. If I can port them over a bunch of games for basically $10, I'll take it. But it's not going to be any of the games I have. The important one that I would want them to port over would be Diablo 3, which I'll talk about when my turn comes. But have you thought about what you've been playing yet, Matt?
Yeah, I've got a list, in fact.
A list.
Yeah.
Well, take it from the exciting ones and then talk about boring ones for hours.
Want exciting. If you want exciting, I have exciting.
Yes.
Because this. Yeah? Are you ready for this? The last week I've been playing Farming Simulator.
Like Harvest Moon, but with no
So
charm.
exciting.
Yeah, that's probably one way of looking at it. Or I'm calling it Harvest Moon for Adult. It is a farming simulator, but that is all you need to know. It's in the title. There's nothing there except driving around, harvesting things, planting things, selling things. That is it. It is a farming simulator. The first thing I did was jump in a combine harvester and try and run people down. And happy to report that you just drive through them. So no mayhem can be had. But it's pretty good actually, in a kind of vague, I never want to play this again sort of way. It's for people that either want to be farmers or are farmers, which you wouldn't think that someone that's working on the field all day would then want to come inside and digitally replicate that experience. There you go. Apparently, that's pretty big with these simulators where the person that does the job goes home and plays it. There you go. And you know what? It does what it does, and it does it well. And that's all you can ask for a game, I suppose. No one in their right mind would play it for fun, but if you really want to have your very own farm, Farming Simulator is now available on PS3 and Xbox 360.
I love the idea that a guy, like 53 years old or whatever, gray stubble, he comes in through the door of his farmhouse. He reeks of sweat. He's covered in the dirt of the fields, flannel shirt with overalls over. He sits down, quick wash of his hands. He sits down to his dinner of cornbread and beans. And then he slaps down on his computer and he's like, "Get me back in that combine. It's corn harvesting time."
It's crazy to me as well because I read this somewhere when truck simulator, a Euro truck simulator, started really getting big. And there was an interview with the guy who owns the company. I don't know whether it's Giant Software that does that as well. They do farm simulator. They might do truck simulator as well. And the guy basically said, "Our audience for truck simulator is people that drive trucks." And he said the biggest complaint is that it's too gamey. It's not truck-like enough. And so
Oh my.
you're there. You don't know what you're doing in Farming Simulator. You're driving around, you're making mistakes, your whole farm is going bankrupt, crops are dying, there's a famine, and you're there thinking, there's people out there that think this isn't realistic enough. They're there going, okay, I can't actually communicate with the vehicles, I can't turn them on myself, it just automatically starts when I jump in. This isn't realistic enough for me. I want something that's more hardcore. That's just crazy to me.
Do they simulate in that game the real life thing where when you after you harvest all your stuff, a company comes back and steals all your seeds so that you're not allowed to grow any stuff that they didn't lease the seeds to you for because they own specific biological versions of those plants? Because that would be very
No, I'm
realistic
afraid
and
not.
terrible.
No, I guess it's not a real farming simulator then.
Yeah, that's a
I
shame.
have other games that aren't as exciting as Farming Simulator, I'm afraid. But still, some good, some bad. I played Heavy Fire Shattered Spear this week. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. It's an on-rail shooter, but it's done in the style of kind of Call of Duty or Battlefield. It's set piece after set piece, but it's on rails, and it's bad. It's really bad. It's like you wouldn't mind it if you just wanted kind of an hour of on-rail shooter game, but you'll finish it in the hour. It released at $20, maybe a little more, and you can finish it in a single sit-in. It has no light gun support on the Xbox 360, so you're playing with a controller. And it works quite well for what it is, but it's still a bad game. The graphics are bad. The voice acting is like something that you'd kind of get YouTube videos or over those speakerphones that you get at drive-through restaurants. It's that bad.
jeez.
It is that bad. And it's quite fun for what it is, but don't ever buy it. What else have I got on my list here? Oh, we're getting on to some good stuff now. I've been playing on the Vita a lot lately after your little slight against it last week, Joe. I have been playing nothing but Vita.
Of course.
Just to show you up, I've been playing Lego Lord of the Rings and Little King's Story. Lego Lord of the Rings, the portable version is terrible. Well, it's not terrible, but you can tell that they've watered it down. It's a 3DS port on a console that could easily have run the PS3 version. And whoever, Traveller's Tales, I guess, and Warner Brothers just decided they'd port the 3DS version, and it is buggy and it's annoying. I got the platinum, so I played it enough for that, but after that, it was like, I've had enough. Little King's Story is charming but flawed, I suppose, in that it is very kind of Pikmin-y. It was a Wii game first, and they've ported it to the Vita. It's very Pikmin-y. You have 30 plus people following you around, which can be a bit annoying at times, and you have to rebuild a kingdom. And it's a bit, you'd probably quite like it, Joe, actually, because it's a bit swaggy. You go out and you kill lots of things and you get lots of items and you sell it for money, and it's pretty good in that respect. But I was just playing it before the show started, and I got completely lost, and I'm not sure how to get home. It's dark and there's lots of things attacking me. So, yeah, a little upset about that, but it's fun. It's pretty fun. It's free on PlayStation Plus this month. So for EU, I don't know about US, but if you get a chance, go, because you might like it. A couple of other games that we can talk about is Shadow of the Colossus. I finally finished
Yay!
that after all these years. I think it came out in 2006, and I started it this year. So I'm finally getting through the old backlog, and
Nice.
it's a very well-designed game. You both know that it's not very often I compliment a game, but it's very well designed. It's not super fun.
Aww.
It's a game that needs a remake. The current version is very buggy. The physics of it is so annoying. You'll be there, and the Colossi will just be kind of walking along, and you'll be jumping around. If it was something pinned to his skin or whatever, it would not be moving. But because you're on him, it's jumping around like mad, and that's annoying. And there's some graphical things, but it wasn't until I got to the end that I realized there was no real reason for me to get to the end. There's no real story until the last kind of half an hour. And
Well, you're trying to raise her from the dead.
yeah, I know, but that's the one thing throughout the whole game. That's what makes you play 10 hours. It's very clever because I couldn't imagine another game doing it, or if there had been any changes to that structure, I can't imagine wanting to get through to the end, but I did. I wasn't especially enjoying some of the colossi fights. There was a few that were hugely annoying, and I still wanted to get through to the end. It was very cleverly designed in that regard.
Let me ask you a question. This is kind of spoilerish. I'll try to not spoil it. There was a part where you had to jump a gap. Were you sad?
I'm just going to go and break this spoiler. I'd actually been trying to kill that horse since I started playing. I had run it off cliffs. I found something really kind of fascinating in the animation. I ran it into walls. I tried to kill it in every way that's possible in that game. I even took a few swipes at it with a sword. And when that horse fell off that bridge, it was the happiest moment I'd had in the game. And then it came back. And I must admit, when it came back, I was like, oh, that's the saddest thing. It came back.
It's limping.
I realized that I'd been trying to kill it anyway. And so I think the twist in that game is actually that the horse is immortal. I think that's the thing no one's talking about. You cannot kill the horse. It will never die.
I thought it was hilarious when you try to hit it with your sword and it makes like a ting noise, like you're striking metal. That was hilarious to me. I would do it all the time.
I was doing it all the time as well, but I was doing it try and kill the damn thing. Maybe that's just me. I enjoyed it. It's worthy of the praise that it's, but it is in desperate need of a remake. I keep seeing kind of people excited for The Last Guardian. No, I don't care about The Last Guardian. I want them to remake Shadow of the Colossus. I want them to fix the physics. I want them to fix the controls and the graphical problems. Because I'm amazed at some of the graphics in there. There's a bit where you're in the desert fighting kind of a big, kind of dragony thing, and you have to hit up at like bags, I suppose, underneath it, and the kind of the sand in the air. See that on PS3 and Xbox 360 games. That's something that they are kind of pushing for PS4. So that was really impressive to see on the PS2. So a remake really would just kind of polish it up and stop it from having the few problems that it could have. And then I think it would pretty much be a perfect game. I don't think there's much you could knock it for, actually.
A lot of people actually complained. I don't know if a lot of people did, but I've seen criticism against the fact that a lot of the like Colossi towards the end, you have to travel on your horse forever, and that kind of got boring. To me, I didn't find it so boring because I kind of liked just running around my horse because the game even back in PS2 age was very pretty. And just kind of like traveling along the landscape and stuff, but that was the only thing that I really heard was like, oh my God, it took me forever to ride my horse all the way to this guy, then I had to do it again.
Well, that's kind of what I was talking about earlier with it being so well designed, because I did cop on that, and it annoyed me a little bit because the fights themselves weren't getting any harder. They would attack occasionally, you could dodge, you could do all that, but as soon as you knew how to beat that monster, it was dead. There was no effort needed. You could do it in a few minutes. There was a little bit of luck needed, but there wasn't much effort needed. And to me, there was no learning curve. What they decided to do was put them further out and have you have to do more to finish them off. So things were dragging out rather than getting harder. And I think if it had got any harder with the physics as it was, again, I wouldn't have wanted to carry on. I think that they did it as well as they could have done at the time. I can't knock it at all for that. And yeah, the difficulty didn't spike enough that it put me off, but it started to feel harder as a result of the longer battles, maybe. I don't know. It was very cleverly done, though.
That I am a little bit
Yes.
ashamed to say that I still have not finished that game, despite the fact that I have
What?
probably played it about six different times or something. And it's not that I don't like it, it's that I'll
Well,
sit
well,
down.
well.
Yeah, I know, it's trouble. But I sit down with that game and I
The
will
shoe
just.
is on the other foot.
I'm trying to defend myself here, for God's sake.
All of the years you've told me about BioShock, and you've never played Shadow of the Colossus.
I know, far older than BioShock.
Well, well, well.
My problem is I sit down and I like it so much that I will end up killing like six of those damn things the first time I put the game in or something, and then it's like I feel like I'm getting too close to the end. I don't want to finish already, and then I take it out and I never ever put it in again. For years I've been wanting to play it. I mean, I've owned it on PS2. I had the HD collection thing or whatever for all this time. And it was like there, yeah, some of the moments in that game are awesome. I remember like fighting the one that's like a giant bird or whatever, and you're clinging to it as it's flying 10 miles in the air or something. The underwater one was the freakiest one, I thought, that I played anyway, because anytime there's a giant monster in the water, it disturbs me pretty much immediately. But one of these days I'll finish it. On the other hand, the first time I have ever felt like, you know, Matt famously doesn't really like artsy games or whatever, and I do, but the first game I ever played that I thought, this game is shit, and people only like it because they think it's artsy or something, was Eco, because I don't understand what the fuck people are talking about when they say that game is great.
I still have to play that game.
Kim and I, my girlfriend and I, actually had this conversation while I was finishing Shadow of the Colossus. She asked me which I preferred, Ico or Shadow of the Colossus, and it's a really hard question to answer because neither are very good. They're both pretty bad. They are pretty bad games when it comes down to it, you know. And yeah, all right, it's a lovely world. Both have beautiful graphics and both are interesting and there's different things to look at, but neither are very good games. And when you kind of look at them as games and try and compare them, you suddenly go, well, I'm kind of glad all these features from Ico never made it into Shadow of Colossus, and I'm glad that these features from Shadow of the Colossus aren't in any other game because they were awful and I hated them. And then you realize the game and come out of it going, I really enjoyed that.
I was just going to say, you were just praising it.
Allison, you haven't played it, so if you want to imagine it, just imagine that you're playing a game where the whole game is an escort quest, basically.
Oh, and, I know.
Because the person you're escorting doesn't speak the language you speak, they only listen maybe half of the time to what the hell you want them to do. And that's the game. It's like having an argument with someone stupid, trying to save them for no reason, even though they don't deserve it. They're not paying any attention to what you want. And if they get caught, you lose. It is the worst.
And yet I came out of it, I don't agree with anything you just said, and yet I came out of it really kind of happy with it. Same with Shadow of the Colossus.
There's like a little bit of a reality distortion field around those games, I think, where maybe if you finish it, you end up liking it more or something. Like Shadow of the Colossus, I actually like. I like climbing on big monsters and stabbing them in the head or whatever. I'm fine with that. But escorting some annoying lady who only wants to pay attention to me half of the time when there's shadow monsters around her and I'm saying, get over here! Get away from the shadow monsters, you idiot! And she's not doing it. It's just like, you know what?
It sounds almost like being married.
I find it interesting that you actually have to hold her hand and drag her places.
To be honest, that's the whole game. If it was just a game where you yelled at her until she did something, people'd be like, this game is terrible. But there's something about holding hands that makes all the people be like, oh my god, they're holding hands, you can lead her around. It's like, who cares? That just makes it more annoying. In any other game, in all of the games that you play where people go, these escort missions are terrible, you don't even have to hold their hand. They will go where you want them to when you tell them to, and it's still bad. In this one, she doesn't listen, and you have to pull her around, and that makes it good? You people are idiots.
It was a different time, Joe. It was a different time.
I don't know why I'm getting so worked up about it, but I just don't understand.
It's funny, so...
I have one more game. It's funny that we've mentioned Bioshock and you nagging at me for years, because I actually finished Alan Wake in the last few weeks.
Woo!
How has that held up? I bet it hasn't held up as well.
I actually really enjoyed it. I didn't think that I was gonna, but I did really enjoy it. I enjoyed it so much, in fact, that I finished all the DLC at the same time. I got it in the bundle a few weeks ago, or a few months ago, whenever that was, and it's set in my Steam library, and I finally got around to starting it, and I was hooked. I didn't think the gameplay was up to much, but the story was great, and the characters were great, and I really enjoyed some of the pages being left around, and that sort of thing, and it's an example of a game that perhaps no one would ever list as one of their favorites ever. but that does the things it does so well that when you're playing it, you have no complaints. Sure, the foresty bits last too long, they really drag on, but then you get to a cutscene and then you get to a twist, and it was so well based on kind of Stephen King and that sort of thing that there was you were just hooked all the time. They were very clever in that, and I can't knock it for what it is.
One, I would list it as one of my favorite games. Two, please tell me that you did not try to pick up all the thermoses.
I picked when I saw them. I think I got the achievement for getting half of them.
Okay, yeah. I remember that was like one of the biggest things that was just like wrong with the game is like it wasn't a game about collecting things. And they kind of just threw that in there, and I was just like, I started collecting them, and I was like, this is bullshit. I'm not collecting them anymore. Also, I every time you got to a TV and it started playing, I forget what they called it
Night
in there,
Springs.
but yeah, Night Springs. Yes, I would always watch those. Those were fantastic. It was like totally Twilight Zone awesome.
With the oh, I have to admit here that I kind of took the crappy way out here. Maybe if I'd have played it on Xbox a few years ago, that would have been different. But with the Humble Bundle, you get every single video. And I watched the first one and I really enjoyed it. And I thought, this is awesome. They've made all these. And then I realized that I'm watching it on a tiny portion of a 22-inch screen. And I thought, why not just download the videos once I'm finished with the game, watch those, see what I think, and enjoy them as they were meant to be seen. And I haven't. So maybe I missed out on that part of the game.
Matt, I really enjoyed like stopping in the middle of the game just to watch those because then it just kind of gave you another eerie atmospheric thing, even though it was completely from the game. But it just, you know, those kinds of stories just fit so well with the theme that you know, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I don't know if watching those in the game made your experience that much better, but I do recommend you go and actually watch them.
I will eventually. It's just now that I've finished, it's like hard work to download them. But you know, I enjoyed it anyway. Really did enjoy it anyway. I know that I was saying that maybe it's not anyone's favorite game, but I can see why it would be because the atmosphere is so good. That game is all atmosphere. It's all character interaction. You know, dodging the shadow people isn't that cool. It gets a bit annoying, and the forests are too long. But the lighting is spectacular. Playing it on PC, it's definitely an improvement over the Xbox 360 version, and it is just so good for light and for atmosphere, as I say, and it's well worth a play for anyone that hasn't played it. However, you did miss out on getting it for a dollar, so.
I think if I was going to play that game, I would have to try and play it on PC because I had recently downloaded the demo or something of Alan Wake American Nightmare, which was like a downloadable. I don't really know that it was a sequel, maybe it was a prequel or something. Because I was like, hey, I remember, I really liked Alan Wake. I want to try this out. And then I played the demo and I was like, ugh, this game does not look that good, and I feel like it does not play that good. So I don't know if American Nightmare is just different than the original somehow, or if like the setting didn't just do it for me, or if I maybe it's just aged too much or something. Maybe I just thought it was too ugly and I should try to replay the original on the PC. I don't know. I did like Alan Wake a lot.
I'm taking a break with Grand Theft Auto 4, and then after that, I might American Nightmare a go.
Yeah, you'll have to tell me if
What do
it's
you mean you're
like
taking a
if you like
break?
it better.
I put maybe 15 hours into Alan Wake in the end there, maybe more, and it's just too much. The DLC, while it was very clever with the use of the floating words, it was a bit overkill. By the time I got to the end, I never wanted to see Alan Wake ever again.
What about the ad placement?
The ad placement?
Wasn't there a DLC where he was like, oh, I'll just use my Verizon phone?
Maybe. I don't remember that. Maybe I missed it. Oh wait, no, I think it is. Yeah, I remember. I don't think it's that obvious, but he drops it or he finds it or something, and it's really obvious that it's an ad placement. Now that you mention it, I remember that.
I would love it if he's being hunted by shadow monsters and he's like, let me just pull out my Verizon Samsung Galaxy Tab or whatever, and he starts talking on it. He calls somebody in as it's ringing, he just turns to the camera and goes, this thing has a 10 megapixel camera, you know? And then and just goes on. Someone picks it up.
That's a bit how the last James Bond film worked out, wasn't it? Oh, have you guys played, what was it called? 007 Legends, maybe. It was the last James Bond film to come out. And basically what it was is that they took all the old Bond films, five classic films, and put the new guy into them, Daniel Craig, into these old films and made them modern. So it's like Goldfinger, and you go into a hotel room, and the girl's lying half naked on the bed. She's painted gold. She's dyed. And then in the middle of the floor, there's a Sony phone, and he goes and picks it up, this mobile phone, and you then have to use the phone to find fingerprints and that sort of thing throughout the story. It is so odd.
That's weird.
Oh, God. That sounds wonderful.
It is terrible. It would be if the game was any good. You know, I could almost look past the fact that, hey, Sean Connery's meant to be here. But no, the game was bad as well.
That's awesome.
And the funny thing about that is that it was a tie-in for Skyfall, where the Skyfall levels were DLC.
Wow, that's everything about making a game done wrong, I think.
Three guesses who published that game.
EA.
It's your next choice.
Activision.
There we go.
EA is like the great Satan now. It's a shame that happened, because I remember how excited we were, or I was, back when they were like publishing Mirror's Edge and taking a chance on Dead Space and everything, and it was like, wow, these guys, they used to be evil and now they're great. And it's like, now Activision hasn't swung back to the good guy like has always happened in the past. Now they're just both evil.
It's so funny because there's a site called Did You Know Gaming that has a bunch of random gaming facts that are really, really interesting. And there was one about Activision and how way back, I don't know what year, very early on in video game days, Activision was actually the first to, I forget if they did a lawsuit or something because... I remember what it was. They wanted to be able to do third-party publishing, which was never allowed yet at all. And also, so that they actually paved the way for publishing and for developers to actually get credit in games, because they never were credited before. And I was like, Activision did that? Holy crap.
I have no problem with the evil things that these companies apparently do. It's,
of course.
You know, it's difficult to say that, you know, a lot of the people that complain seem to be complaining because it means that they have to put their bank details in and actually buy something extra. You know, there's very few times the Skyfall thing is one of those times where you actually look at a situation and go, yeah, that's been handled a little bit dodgily.
Everyone's going to say, there goes Matt defending big companies that don't give a shit about him. Because I always feel like that on the internet, if you say anything like, hey, they're allowed to do what they want, you immediately get 800 people that go, you just hate consumers. You think they should have all the money and they should give you nothing in return. And it's like, Jesus.
What happened to the good old days of gaming? You'd go into a store with 10 pence in your pocket and you'd come out with 60 hours worth of gameplay.
Yeah. Ugh. I don't understand these people. God forbid you say it's just that they are entitled, because they will go off on a rant about how it's not that they're entitled, it's that corporations are evil and they make a game and then they cut half of the game just so they can sell it to you again later.
There's two examples of things that really annoyed me with this, actually. The first is people complaining about sides and things that are no longer in games, like where you have to play for 100 hours and then you'll unlock a cheat code which will let you have a big head or something like that. And what annoys me about that is that it's proven pretty much that like 10% of people finish their games in the first place. So that's 10% of people who actually see the ending movie. So 90% of people are never going to make use of these things. So why put it in the game? You know, yeah, all right, reward the 10%, but if it's going to cost lots of extra money, then that 10% should probably fund it. That seems fair to me. And the other thing is, a more specific example was the last piece of DLC that was released for Mass Effect 3. I forget what it was called, but there had been mention of it, or of the character, or of the mission in an interview months and months before the game came out, and it had never been finished, so they cut the game. And then 18 months after the game came out, they released it as DLC, and people went, oh, they've cut content from it again, and now they want us to buy it. This was 18 months after the game had shipped. They'd
Oh
never
my
finished the
God.
content, but because they'd originally planned for it to be in game, they wanted it to be free, even though it was out all this time after the game.
That's ridiculous.
That is crazy to me. That I'm to the point now where the things that Activision does don't even bother me that much. Like, for some reason, everyone hates DLC, and I don't. Like, if I liked a game, especially if I feel like I got my $60 worth out of it, which I normally do once I've, completed it. Like you said, a lot of people don't complete games at all. If I want to play more of it and they give me the option to pay a little bit of money and get to play more of it, I think that's awesome. And I think that people with brains largely also think that's awesome. I don't necessarily think that anymore there is much proof that developers make everything and then cut half of it to resell it later. To be honest, like even the developers you think that are terrible or whatever, I don't think they do that often. I think it's too transparent. When they do that and
Oh yeah,
you pay the
definitely.
money and you find out the shit's already on the disc, I would argue that that is annoying. Because, I mean, then, yeah, you made it and you had time to put it on a disc and you charged me for it. It's a different conversation if the stuff that you got to play with just for the $60 was worth it or whatever. But then, I mean, you can't make people on the internet happy. If you put it on the disc or whatever and you charge them for it, they get furious. But if it's very obvious that they put no work into it until the game shipped, see BioShock Infinite, they announced two DLC packs that sound really, really cool, and it's going to be basically, what, a year or more since that game came out when the first one releases because they've had to actually take the time and make it. And now people are mad that it's taken so long. It's like, you cannot have it both fucking ways.
I can understand the on-disc thing, but even then, kind of look a little closer at why it was done, you can kind of understand it. I don't think there's a game that's ever shipped where it's the full content on the disc. It's kind of half finished, and they've just done it to keep costs down so that they don't have to pay for download space, and that people don't have to wait all day while they're downloading things. And back when with Street Fighter they found that there was characters on the disc, Capcom did a pretty good job of explaining themselves, but no one was reading it because everyone was going, "Oh my God, how dare they!" That's what everyone sounds like.
Yeah, I agree. That's how I read internet voice. Anyway, the point was the DLC stuff doesn't bother me anymore. I'm more bothered by free to play at this point. Like, and to me that means EA's worse because everything they do seems to have some free to play component. Like, Plants vs. Zombies 2 should be a game that I have spent a million hours on already because I spent a million hours playing the first one, and I think Plants vs. Zombies 2 is a better game. But I've already gotten to the point where if I want to get to even the second world, I'm still only in Egypt world, to get to the second world, I would have to go back and replay all the levels I've already played to earn stars or whatever. And to get the stars, you always have to follow some ridiculous condition, like you can't plant any plants in the back two rows because Dave is growing a mold colony there. Or like, oh, you can only do, I don't even know, I can't think of any other ones. The one where you couldn't use the back two rows was infuriating to me. But it's already to the point where it's like, I don't want to play this game under these weird conditions. I just wanted it to be like the first one, where it got increasingly more difficult and I just played it. And my other option is I could just pay a dollar or two and I could go straight to the next world. And it's like, no, I'm not going to pay a fucking dollar because it's clear that you designed these levels to be annoying so that I would want to pay that money. I'm this close to deleting it off my phone and never thinking about it again. It will be one of my biggest disappointments of all time.
You're one of the first people I've heard have actually played it and have about that. There's a lot of people that are like, EA are terrible, and they've never actually played it. And then there's a lot of people that are like, yeah, but I was gonna do this stuff anyway. I'm gonna replay everything. And it's funny actually, because the one argument that I've seen for this is someone, it was on Reddit of all places, and someone was having a bit of a moan about it. And this one guy wrote this post about how in the olden days, we all used to play our games to 100%. We'd do everything. It was, you know, we'd get 100% value out of every single product. And here's a game that's free, and it wants you to get that value out of it and play everything and go through the levels and do it in different ways. And we're fighting against it. We haven't paid a penny for it, but we're fighting against it because we don't want to do 100%.
That is true. But well, even before that game came out though, like I'm pretty sure I said on the air, no matter what they put in that game, like because they people were annoyed when they said there are going to be some plants that you don't need but you can pay money for. And I said, you know what? I'll pay the money for them. I will buy everything this game has to offer because it won't come close to how much money I spent rebuying the first one again and again and again. And I stand by that. If the game was just basically designed the way the first one was, I probably would pay the money. I'd buy all the plants. I wouldn't buy like in-game coins or whatever because I never remember to use the stupid powers anyway. But I would probably buy those plants. I would want them to have the money for it. I mean, I'm okay with that. But there's some block in my brain where I don't want to earn those stars. If they made it difficult, like, okay, now you have to beat this level again, and to get a star, we're gonna send different zombie types or twice as many zombies or something. Fine. But when they basically limit the way you can play, it doesn't make it more strategic to me. It makes it more annoying. But I can't just pay that dollar or two. To me, as soon as I've paid that dollar or two to just go to the next world, I've cheated. And to me, the idea of paying money to cheat, I can't do it. It's infuriating. But I also can't force myself to do things I find annoying just to get there. So I look at that icon every day and I think that should be my favorite game right now, but I have no desire to press the button like at all.
You should play Farming Simulator.
I should.
Hey,
A good old-fashioned game, no microtransactions, no DLC. You just jump in a tractor and drive around. It's brilliant.
Have you guys heard Path of Exile?
I've heard of it.
I've heard of it. Don't place it.
It's basically like Diablo, but I actually like it better than Diablo. Diablo is coming out with an update that's supposed to fix everything or whatever. But yeah, it's basically Diablo. You know, you run around with friends and you kill things and whatever. It's a free-to-play game, and they do it so right because the entire game is free. Like everything, every real money purchase is cosmetic. It does nothing to help you in the game. You can't, you know, use real money to get more money in game. You can't, you know, buy weapons. You can't gain levels or anything. It's like you buy to permanently make your swords look pretty, or to change. They have some where like so certain spells will they change like the animation of it to make it look like super cool. Or you can get pets that follow you. The pets don't do anything. They don't help you fight. They just follow you. They're just there to look cute. And there are some things that are a little more helpful, like you have you know you have your own chest where you can store your stuff and you can access it, you know, between characters and stuff. And you can pay money to get more room in the chest. So that's like the only thing that really, you know, actually affects the game more so. Like you can expand that. And but other than that, it's like everything is purely cosmetic. And I purchased something because by the end of me playing it, I had logged in over 50 hours in this game and not paying a dime. And I was like, I love this game so much. I want to support these people. So I'm going to pay for this cool cosmetic thing. And I'm going to look cool when I walk around and people see me. And that was it. It's pretty sweet.
I think the developers have kind of, it would have been nice for them for it to happen the other way around, where there was games that had cosmetic improvements that you could buy, and that it would kind of evolve from there into the free-to-play model as we know it, because it would probably have been a little bit fairer. But instead, it started out as the free-to-play model that we know, and other companies have now kind of taken the cosmetic route. But you can see the bigger companies taking the free-to-play route as we know it. You know, like Nintendo, they announced this Pokemon Bank, where The only way you can send Pokemon from Pokemon Black and White to Pokemon X and Y is to buy a year's subscription of Pokemon Bank, which is an extension of the computer system inside X and Y. And, I played Pokemon Heart Gold not long ago, and there is no way that I could have filled the computer. So that kind of makes you think that perhaps Pokemon X and Y, the limitation on the amount of Pokemon you can store, and that's going to push up sales for the Pokemon Bank, which is a yearly subscription. And you read it and you think, that's a good idea, storing your Pokemon in the cloud. And as soon as you get to the bit where it says a yearly subscription, you think, screw that. There is no way I am giving Nintendo money for a whole year just so that
Yeah.
they can look after my digital pretend pets.
That is crazy. I man, that's gonna frustrate some people, but I guess there's just gonna be more people who are 8 years old and they say, "Mom, you better buy me that Pokemon Bank because I have all of my guys from Red to now and I need some place to keep them." I've got a weird thing where I had wanted to try Path of Exile at one time or whatever, but for some reason, even if a game is free and I love it, like if I loaded up that game and I played for 50 hours and I thought, I love this developer, I want to give them some money, I am incapable of buying things that are useless, like to a game. I cannot buy something purely cosmetic. I can't do it. Even if it means, like, here's how fucking crazy I am. If there was an option, like, say I played the game, say I did everything you did, I played it for 50 hours, I really wanted them to have some money. If there was an option to, like, just give them $10 and get nothing for it, I would do that. But I would be unwilling to
You
pay
probably could.
$5 for some shiny things. Like, I don't know what, I don't, that's a weird mental block that I have.
Yeah, that is a weird mental block. I mean, at least you could do the thing that gains you more space in your chest or additional. I think there's also another one for additional character slots. Of course, I didn't make enough characters to use that anyways, but
Well, we need to wrap in a
somewhat
minute
useful.
anyway, but I will quickly, since you talked about that, talk about Diablo 3 on the console, which is excellent. It's the best way to play Diablo 3 because it doesn't have stupid auction houses, which ruins the entire point of the game. I was a huge Diablo 2 fan. Diablo 2 was my World of Warcraft before I was in a position to play World of Warcraft. I mean, I played it for years. I would make characters. I could get them to the highest level, which was 90 or 80, I forget, in a day, like in one day, playing online, teaming up with
Wow.
people, just running the foothills in the barbarian place with a sorceress throwing frozen orbs over and over and over and over and over again until I hit the top level, and then it was Mephisto runs looking for legendaries over and over, or looking for Zod runes and killing that crazy dead rogue lady in a tower somewhere. I forget all the names of everything, obviously. But I couldn't play Diablo 3 because of the stupid always on bullshit. What were you gonna say?
And now you can't even get 15 stars in Plants vs. Zombies 2. What has happened to you, Joe? What's happened to
I know. The difference is that I had fun playing Diablo 2 over and over and over again. Even doing the same thing and just looking for loot, that was fun because I could look for loot any way I wanted to. They weren't telling me you can only look for loot if you'll use half the keyboard. See, I wouldn't have liked that. I don't like being limited. That's the problem. I couldn't play Diablo 3 because of the always on thing. I was too nervous about my terrible satellite connection dropping all the time. And I didn't like the sound of the auction houses because, like I said, there's literally nothing to do in that game but fight bosses and try to get better items than the one you have. And people quickly found when the PC version came out that if they were willing to spend like $10 on the real money auction house, they could have the best items for their character. And then they realized, hey, great, I've got all these best items for my character. Now there's no reason to play this game because there's nothing to do but find items. Like, as soon as you've got them, that's it. That's game over. So Blizzard really screwed the pooch for that one, I thought. But by bringing it to console and giving you nice direct control over your guy, it's more like, I don't know, there were some old. It's like Gauntlet, a little bit. you just run around and you smash everybody and you get some sweet loot. Yeah, it's like Gauntlet with loot. It's the best game ever.
Can you kill horses?
Yeah, you will like this, Matt. There's a secret level called Whimsyshire, which is a place of colorful rainbows and grassy fields or whatever that they made when they were super annoyed that everyone said the game was too colorful. So if you go there, it's very bright and shiny, and there's literally rainbows and, like, trees with smiley faces and stuff, and I think the majority of your enemies are unicorns. So if that does it for you.
People complained that it was too colorful?
Yeah, when the very first time they showed art for Diablo 3, I think they showed the place you start in the actual game, and it was, like, it's like fall there. There's like, it's brown and, you know, the trees have lost their leaves and stuff. So it was like brown and orange instead of just being black and gray. And people said, this is too colorful. Diablo's supposed to be dark and scary.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So welcome to the internet age. Anyway, I'll be talking about this for a long time, it seems like. But initial impression, it's very good. The review will be up probably like tomorrow, I would think. Well, friends, we've been in here for far too long, I think. I might even be longer than last week's, and that wasn't the intention.
Oh, shit.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. From me and everyone else here at GRCast, email the show, podcast@gamesreviews.com, to complain, tell me why I'm stupid and Eco is great, or why Matt and I shouldn't be defending large corporations that make millions of dollars and just want to fleece idiots like us for every penny we have. I'm glad to hear it. All right, that's it for us. Until next week, we are done.
See ya.
User.